This is my few geese that I've got that I feed twice a day. Hatch them in an incubator. One's got a very poor leg and we call her Limpy. She's 2 years old and she lays regularly. And I'm hoping to sit some more goose eggs and hatch some more out. Here you are, girls. And over the gate, I've got some calves. I'm a farmer's wife and I've been married to Michael Frampton for 48 years and came up here as a young bride. And after a few years, I got bored and I asked if I could take on the calves. And they said yes, and I did them for the next 25, 30 years till my family got married and then my sons took on and I was made redundant. So now I have a lovely social life, doing what farmers' wives do, meeting friends for coffee and looking out to my few bits of poultry. I'm going to let out my hens now and take the eggs. About 16 hens here, they're Morans, and they lay lovely brown dark eggs. And these younger ones, geese, are ones that I hatched out in the incubator, and they will come and lay in about 3 months' time. See if we've got any eggs. Six. That's pretty good. This afternoon I shall be going up the road and into the fields to pick some lovely blackberries because I'm doing a harvest supper in the village of Broad Windsor and I've got to make some apple blackberry pies. Come on. Come on.
As we walk along this little bit of the Wessex Ridgeway, we're actually turning the corner of Pilsen and Lewesden and down through what is Temple Brook. Temple Brook rises in the side of Pilsen Hill and is a tributary of the River Axe. And it's the valley that I was born in. This small area got such tremendous memories in this little church of Blackdown, part of the Broad Windsor parish. You see with it what looks like a modern spire, because the church burnt down in the 60s and was rebuilt. And this little hamlet has kept vigorous over all those years. If I go back to my youth, I remember cutting corn and in wet harvest times having to stand up sheaves and turn sheaves. And in fact, the earliest days still with horses. And I've still kept one of my old wagons that we used for carrying corn in those early days. I used to get given the task of taking the horse for shoeing on a Saturday morning, and you'd finish shoeing the horse, and it was quite a joke, because the blacksmith obviously knew that if I didn't get on the horse quickly, the horse would walk home without me, because it knew the way back into its stable, and I, as a small boy, would be running behind it. But because of that period here, whatever conversation I get into picks up these little bits of history. I recount Martha Brown, the last lady in Dorset to be publicly hanged. Her husband, who suffered in that murder, is laid to rest in Blackdown churchyard. I, as a boy, used to go to church, and on one occasion Lady Penny told me how Thomas Hardy, who witnessed that public hanging in Dorchester, had described the event to her. So I have my bits of history from this side of Pilsen, and regularly quote Wordsworth when he recounted, having been in this area, that it was the most wonderful place in the world to have had the pleasure of spending time.
I was born at Philcombe Farm, Morecambe Lake, in 1928, and we were about three fields from Golden Cap, and Golden Cap is the highest cliff on the south coast of England. And then I moved from there when I was, well, I can't remember moving, I was only a baby, to Mutton Street Lane in the Marshwood Vale, and stayed in that cottage called Foxglove for about 3 years, I suppose, and then from when I was about three till I was 13. We were living at Mutt Street Lane then, up at Smitty Farm. Of course, we went to Lambert's Castle races every year. I mean, it was held lovely weather, the third Wednesday in June. And we had to walk up there. It was about a mile and a half, I suppose, across the fields. And of course, we didn't have too much money to spend, so we used to try to get in without paying, and we used to walk all up grassy fields and up in the hill. It's quite steep, and there was brambles and stinging nettles and fern, and they still caught us before we got to the top. But we used to run like the clappers and try to dodge a man who was trying to catch us. But what used to make my day was when I got up there, I had an uncle who never had any children. And if I could get hold of him, he would give me a shilling, which was quite a lot of money then. And I could have several penny rides during the day on the bumper cars and everything, you know. They had horse racing, but they weren't very big fields, no, only about three or four in a race, because there wasn't many people. I mean, I'm going back in 1933 to 1938, I suppose, 39. Well, then they stopped it, about late 1950s, I think. They stopped the horse racing anyway, and then it gradually died out. It was a yearly thing, and, you know, for what went on back in those days, everyone went. Kids used to have time off from school or run away from school, and that most kids went. We never used to see much those days. Really good fun.
Coming into Lyme along the River Lim and the end of your Wessex Trail, you will pass the town mill. There were lots of local farms around Lyme Regis. It was all farmland, and they all used the mill for milling their corn. But it fell into disuse, and then a group of local townspeople decided that they wanted to restore it. It's beautiful, it's evocative, it's noisy. It really gives you a sense of what it would have been like in its working heyday.
There's some 40 buckets on this wheel. There's roughly about 4 or 5 gallons of water going into each bucket. I've always been used to machinery, but I've never been a miller. I've picked it up since I've retired, and I rather enjoy it. And I tell people what I do, and they very often take on a bag and try it out for themselves. It's very interesting, really. It's a very relaxing job.
Lyme has a particular location with regard to fossils. Fossils of the Jurassic period, and some Victorian men especially would go and explore and dig up and collect fossils. But what we have in Lyme Regis, unusually, was a girl who came from a very poor family. This lady was called Mary Anning, and she found all sorts of different fossils, and she found the first complete ichthyosaur with her brother. She was the person who first found enough so that people could start to get a real idea of what these creatures would actually have been like. What Mary Anning started has certainly caught a lot of people's interest in the 21st century.
Look into the distance there, into this bay called the Spittles. Everything starts off up in the cliff face there. And as that cliff face crumbles, or gets wet and slips, it slips down onto the next tier down, making that level heavy. That pushes out and slips down again onto this lower layer, making this lower layer heavy. That pushes out onto the beach, especially when it's wet, and then the high tide plucks all the pieces of stone out of these mudslips on the base of the beach here and lays them out across the beach for us. It's an ongoing process that we call translation from the top to the beach, or as we like to call it, the fossil conveyor belt. And it's a continual process. The mud is constantly on the move, albeit that you can't see it, but it's constantly depositing material fresh on the beach every time the tide comes in.